I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. It's Midday with the Mayor. On Tuesday, Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott announced the broad outline of a plan to give $35 million of American Rescue Plan funds to the Mayor's Office of Broadband and Digital Equity. So far, only $6 million has been allocated to specific projects that include installing hotspots in a few West Baltimore neighborhoods and providing internet access at nearly two dozen rec centers. We'll also talk about the mayor's plan to provide squeegee workers and others with training and employment opportunities to get them off the street and into a steady job. Plus, country music singing sensation Brittany Spencer checks in before her concert here this weekend. She was raised in Baltimore, and she's making a name for herself in Nashville. Midday starts after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, and today it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins us on the first Thursday of every month to talk about how he and his administration are meeting the challenges of our city. Our conversation this month took place a couple of days ago. Because we're on tape, we can't take any calls or comments today. Mr. Mayor, how you doing?
I am doing all right, Tom. I hope you're doing well as well.
I am. So on Tuesday afternoon, you announced the latest dollop of investment from the American Rescue Plan funds. It's a $35 million announcement you made to close the digital divide. Tell us what that's going to be all about.
Yeah, I think we know that, Tom, COVID-19 and the pandemic showed us that internet access has become really fundamental and a necessity for our daily lives. So ensuring digital equity, in my opinion, was not a choice, but an imperative. And we can't wait. We won't wait. Baltimore now will take an active role to not just bridge that digital divide, but work towards closing it once and for all. So we released $35 million focused on the administration's efforts to close the digital divide. The first $6 million will be used to dramatically expand public internet access, expanding a city fiber to 23 recreation centers that don't have it right now, and bringing secure Wi-Fi hotspots to West Baltimore neighborhoods like Sandtown, Winchester, like Upton, like Truett Hearts, like Mondawmin. And we're going to be releasing the details about the remaining of that $29 million in early 2022. What I said, Tom, is that this is a down payment to build out the infrastructure needed to move towards treating broadband for what it really is, a public good and necessity for everyday life. And we have to start treating it the same way that we do water and electricity. This is just a start, but it's also important that announced today, we're inviting all of Baltimore to review, provide input, and join the conversation around Baltimore's digital equity framework, which you can find at bde.baltimorecity.gov. That's BDE, not to be confused with BDC, bde.baltimorecity.gov.
So you've announced how you're going to spend the first $6 million of the $35 million. You say that you'll announce plans for the rest of the money later. Is that because those plans are still being developed, or you just decided you don't want to talk about them yet?
No, it's about making sure it's a combination of things, right? When you're talking about this kind of big infrastructure investment, Tom, you have to make sure that you're meeting with all of the partners, make sure that you're planning things out in a way that you're able to achieve them. But more importantly, making sure that you're attacking it with the right focus and at the right pace. So our digital equity director, Jason Hardaback, is an expert in this field and has been talking to our school system, talking to our colleagues, rec and parks, talking to our private community, our nonprofit community, about how we can have the largest impact of these dollars working in partnership with others. And that's why we're going to be rolling those other things out as we move on.
Part of the money, according to a press release that you issued with this announcement, is going to be spent to hire a digital equity coordinator and a staff. How does that position differ from the position that Jason Hardaback holds? In December of last year, he was hired to be the first director of broadband and digital equity in Baltimore. Why do we have two positions now?
Yeah, it's about, you have to understand about this, right? That this person, Jason, it's no different than any other agency, right? When you think about wrecking parks, for example, since we're talking about Wi-Fi rec centers, Director Moore is the director of recreation and parks. There's actually a deputy director for recreation who does the nuts and bolts of how we should be programming, where should we be going. There's someone for parks. This is about making sure that we hire folks with expertise in Wi-Fi deployment and dealing with fiber, allowing Jason to be the architect of how we're moving the city towards these goals, but having other experts along with him to help us move towards that goal in a more rapid and the best professional way possible.
So right now, the concentration is going to be on West Baltimore. You mentioned some of the neighborhoods that will get this broadband infrastructure, the fiber infrastructure. Do you foresee that it would also go to the east side and to other neighborhoods in Baltimore at some point?
Yeah, we're talking about, as I said, working to getting rid of the digital divide once and for all. And what we're doing, Tom, is not going to replace people's the ability and need to have it in home. But we have to start somewhere. And again, as I said earlier, we're going to be working in partnership with the schools, with the libraries, all of these other partners to make sure that we're spreading this throughout the city. And this is just the beginning.
And does this piggyback on the efforts that you mentioned the schools and the library undertook, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic when kids were forced to be home for online learning instead of in-person classes? There was a big effort, and we heard lots of talk about discs being put on top of libraries and schools and places in various neighborhoods. I mean, there is some infrastructure that was created, was it not, during the beginning months of the pandemic, and is that going to continue to be part of this new plan as well? How does that fit in?
Yeah, this is about building and working in partnership, right? We're going to be working even in a deeper way with the school system and the Pratt Library system to keep building that kind of work out and expanding it. That's why I've always said that there are great partners. Dr. S is a great partner for us. We have a great partner, Heidi, and the folks at the library. It's about us working together to deal with this issue, not one entity. And be quite honest, as I said at this presser for this release earlier, it's also going to require more from our private partners and other nonprofit and philanthropy. We all got it going to have to work together to end this digital divide, Tom. And I think this is the start. It's the start of us working in support of and with our partners, and like the schools and recs and libraries, but we have so much more to do.
What's your take on the timeline for this kind of thing? I mean, you talked about ending the digital divide in eight years by 2030, but 30, do you think we can get a solid digital infrastructure in place before then?
I do believe that we can. We know for this particular portion, contracts and things will go out, and we'll hopefully see things starting over the next few months. I think the other important thing, Tom, that's coming is we know now that the infrastructure package is coming and that we're going to be, this president has said that he wants to invest in this in a very real way. So we believe that Baltimore and other cities have the opportunity to do this. We are going to be all in on doing it.
So let me be clear then, the money you talked about for this initial allocation for digital infrastructure comes from the American Rescue Plan. It does not come from the infrastructure bill. So do you expect more money?
We're very hopeful that will happen, sir. When you look at the opportunities that are out there from the state and coming with the feds, we're going to be looking to working with all of our partners to see how we can receive even more investment to do this, in which we know the president and the vice president wants to do.
So the infrastructure bill does include money for digital infrastructure. So you are, but you just haven't heard from the federal government yet about how much of that money might make its way into Baltimore City.
Yep. As you know, that they're working through how they're going to be giving the money out and what the process is going to be. And we're just eagerly waiting, patiently waiting so that we can get on board.
It's Midday with the Mayor. I'm Tom Hall. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is my guest. We can't take any calls or comments today because our conversation was recorded a couple of days ago. So, Mr. Mayor, you also made an announcement recently about, this is about the week before Thanksgiving or so, about an investment having to do with jobs and economic recovery from COVID-19, including $30 million to expand workforce development. And then even more recently, you announced a 90-day plan to address squeegee kids and give them jobs. So I want to talk about workforce development. The $30 million of the American Rescue Plan funds that you want to allocate to this, how's that going to work? Who's going to get that money? And what's your expectation as to what they will do with it?
All right. This one is a very important and a complicated one. So I'll try to walk through it all. First, I think the most important thing is that this is the largest investment in workforce development that the city has ever seen. Right. And what's going to happen is the Mayor's Office of Employment Development will receive $30 million over four fiscal years to expand that workforce development efforts for job placements and young people and disadvantaged job seekers. That includes those returning home from incarceration, opportunity youth, and recipients of public assistance. So it breaks down as follows, Tom. It's going to be $5.2 million for higher up, a transition jobs program with city and city quasi agency. This program is going to offer transitional positions at $15 an hour to enable at least 220 low-income residents to earn wages and support the economic recovery of their households. The higher-up team will deliver public services that support a cleaner and safer and more welcoming city. The second portion about this is $8.9 million for train up, which will offer occupational skills training, industry-recognized credentials, and $100 a week stipends for folks going through that program. This will benefit nearly 1,000 residents to upskill and obtain jobs in high-demand industries in Baltimore and the region, from biotech to business services, from healthcare and information technology. The next is a $8.4 million investment in YouthWorks, allowing 4,000 more young people to be a part of YouthWorks over two summers. Additionally, these dollars will be used to create the first year-round YouthWorks Academy to benefit at least 100 young people to continue employment during the school year as we pilot out that year-round YouthWorks program. And finally, the workforce investment includes $2.9 million to support programming and wage subsidies. We will be providing behavioral health, legal services, adult education, financial empowerment counseling, and career navigation to residents participating in higher up and train up. And we'll be providing wage subsidies for small minority and women-owned businesses that hire residents who have been impacted by the pandemic. It's about us investing in our people, Tom, allowing them to do what they all want to do, and that's to provide for themselves and their families and do that in a way where they can do it with dignity and pride because they're getting the training, getting all the services that they need.
Will it, for example, be able to match people who need work with the employers who need employees? We hear a lot about restaurants, for example, front of house, back of house, cooks, people, waiters, waitresses, people who, restaurants who can't stay open as many days in a week as they'd like to because they don't have enough people. Are you going to be training people to, you know, fill the positions? I was talking just the other day with the president of Hopkins Medicine, Kevin Sowers, who says it's not just nurses that there's a shortage of at Johns Hopkins and other hospitals around the country, but it's people up and down the employment landscape at places like Hopkins. So entry-level jobs are difficult to fill as well. Will people be able to be in these higher-up programs and train-up programs to learn the skills that they need to be able to work at a place like Johns Hopkins?
Yes, and that's why I specifically, when we talked about train-up, called out the healthcare and information technology services and business services. This is about working with all of our partners and businesses in the city. You know how big of a partner Hopkins has been to the city, and we're going to continue to work with them and everyone we can, Tom. And I just want to make sure that this point is heard too. This is money over and above the great work that MOED already does to do that training and working with employees and employers all the time. So absolutely, we will be making sure that we're trying to fill those empty spots.
And with these transitional job programs like HireUp, the current allocation is $5.2 million new dollars for them. Are you convinced that they will be able to scale up what they've been doing to the degree that you are talking about? I mean, you're talking about 1,000 people being trained with TrainUp to get better jobs, to be given stipends and subsidies to get better jobs. Do you really think that they have the capacity to add 1,000 people to the rosters of people that they're working with currently?
I do. And we know that if you look back, even they've really proven that MOED has proven that they can do something like that. When you look back at when they had One Baltimore for Jobs after the unrest, when there was all this interest, they did a great job of bringing people in, training them in, and hiring them up into positions. And I know that we can do it. And we're going to continue to push them and monitor them and make sure that they're meeting the goals. But we know that we have to invest in workforce development and training people, because we want to be able to put those Baltimoreans who are telling us they want to be able to provide for their families to work.
It's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins me. Our conversation was pre-recorded, so we can't take any new calls or comments today. So, Mr. Mayor, let's talk about squeegee kids. They have been much in the news of late. Just a couple of days ago, the Baltimore Sun, Dan Rodericks, relayed a story of an attorney who was parked at on President Street at Lombard and witnessed one of the squeegee kids being accosted by some guy with a bat. So it's a dangerous situation, obviously, for some of these young people who are out there doing it. You announced a 90-day squeegee jobs program. I don't have to tell you the long and sordid history of attempts to employ squeegee kids. I mean, I found an article from 1985 in which the squeegee kids were given badges and IDs and taught how to be courteous to drivers and, you know, placed in particular corners and particular numbers, and they were going to try to make a go of it. That fell through, obviously, in 2018. Then Mayor Catherine Pugh had a $2 million program to employ squeegee kids. In 2019, Mayor Jack Young had a $1 million to employ squeegee kids. Business leaders in 2019 sent a very strongly worded letter to the mayor at the time saying, you've really got to do something about this. This is a difficult situation, and it's hurting our city. So now you've announced recently a program for squeegee kids as well. I mean, what is making this these efforts to get these kids alternative ways of income? What is the barrier? Why can't this be a problem that successive administrations haven't been able to fix?
I think, Tom, I think that one, you have to send me that article. You have to make sure you email me that. I need that article.
I will.
For my own. But I think that when we think about young people that are squeegeeing or people that are panhandling, Tom, I think what happens with, and I know you know this, how this issue gets sensationalized, that we allow ourselves to not actually think about things as they are. The reality is, Tom, is that this issue has been, and you said at least has been happening since the year after. I was probably 1 year old. I was 1 year old or less when you read that article that you were talking about was written, right? Because we haven't addressed the issues that caused it in the first place. We have to be honest about that, right? When you look at the disinvestment that has happened in neighborhoods, right? When you look at how we are still the city that has as the poster child for redlining, we know what's happening. We know why young people are out there. They'll tell you if you talk to them why they're out there, they're out there because they need money for their family to eat. They need to help their mom and their dad with bills. That's the reality. This is a societal issue at its core. However, when you see that bunch of young people in the corners, it really illustrates our failures as a society, as a city, as a state, as a country, because we know it's been such a long thing. We have to acknowledge the trauma and challenges that our young people, especially those that are squeezy, face. I understand what many of them are going through, and we have to deal with those factors. And I think that that's what makes the way that we're attacking it a little different, because it's not just, and I'll use this as an example. I was on President Street, as I probably go up and down President Street more than anybody, right? Because I have to go to and fro from around the city, from City Hall. And we stopped at a light and was talking to one of the young men. And this is after quietly, I guess about a month or 2 months ago, two of my deputy mayors went out with a bunch of my agencies out there to wrap their arms around young men and young women that were squeezing, seeing that was going on. So I wanted to do a follow up and said to the young man, hey, did you guys talk to the African-American male engagement and want to make sure that we're getting you guys opportunities to get employed, et cetera, et cetera. The young man immediately said to me, Mr. Brandon, I'm not ready for that yet. They're working with me now to get my mind right, to get me in the right mental space so that I can be ready to get and take a job. That's a powerful thing for a young person to say. And that's and what
is that
is.
The kind of thing, Mr. Mayor? I mean, just forgive me for interrupting, but is that the kind of thing that higher up will do, that train up will do, that youth works will do, programs that you're also doing? I mean, are these all these separate things, or are they coordinated in any way?
They are, but also it's intense on this too. So the 90-day plan is going to focus on the holistic ways to do that, right? MOAN, the African American Engagement, will deploy engagement staff to the intersections, right, to host resources to the corner events so that we can go and inform these young women and young men around the programs and get them into those programs, right? Like, that's what we have to do, Tom. We have to go and get them and pull them in. Working with DOT to have traffic control, right? Also, the connection to that education, employment, and entrepreneurship will also be led by the Mayor's Office of Children and Family Success. We're working with local employers and MOED as we work and train these folks up to get these young people into better positions. It's about working all of those things together, pulling them into these things that we have as a part of this focus, Tom, but we have to go to them to do that.
There are those who say that the squeegee kids are so intimidating that it's keeping people out of the city, that it's a barrier for people coming downtown to go to restaurants or to other events. Do you believe that that's the case?
What I'll say to you is this, and I had someone say this to me, that they knew this young man who was squeegeeing for many, many years, right? And they said that, well, it was okay when he was little, but now he's older, he's a teenager, he's intimidated. And when people say they're intimidated, and I think about the fact that so many people go through the intersection and don't have problems, and we know that I'll never shy away from that there are actual real issues and things that happen that are not okay and that people have to focus on. But the other reality that I would say that we have to understand this, why do people say that they're intimidated? Because the overwhelming majority of people that go through that intersection, Tom, don't have a bad interaction, right? We have to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, what is it about these young people in particular? Is it because they're African-American and asking for money and that they look bigger to folks, or folks assume that they're violent? Those are the kind of societal questions we have to ask ourselves, because I go through the intersection all the time. I never feel intimidated.
Well, you're certainly right that the vast, vast majority of people who go through intersections don't have any trouble at all. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott, thank you for your time, sir. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Coming up, one of country music's brightest stars, who was born and raised in Baltimore, Brittany Spencer, is coming back to her hometown for a show on Sunday night, and she will join me after a quick break. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.